Welcome to Cartoonist Kayfabe. My name is Jim Rugg.
I'm Ed Piskor.
I'm so excited, Ed. This is like another wrestling comic for us to look at in Charles Burns. But before we dive into El Borba, tell us about Red Room.
El Borba, published by Fantagraphics, publisher of the world's greatest cartoonist. Let's continue that legacy, Jim. Red Room, issue one. Going to be on the stands in May 2021. Depending on when you watch this video, you could either order the comic, you could get it put on your pull list for it, for its monthly release, or you could pre-order the comic. It's going to, like I said, be coming out on a monthly basis. At least 22 pages of story every month. The first issue, 64 pages, so triple size, basically. Here are some of the variant covers for the first issue. There's the Jim Rugg variant, Peach Momoko variant, and there are store exclusives out there. This one's for Third Eye Comics. But if you wanted to read the comics ahead of time, you can hit my Patreon, patreon.com/Ed Piskor, and I have 3 issues up there as we speak.
You can join me on patreon.com/Jim Rugg, and I post lots of original art. I'm doing comparisons of Street Angel comics page by page. I also post my out-of-print zines and mini-comics. These are pages from my most recent upload, which is the catalog for a ballpoint pen notebook paper art show that I did. And I have to show off these wrestling pages because El Borba seems like the perfect piece. But you can find lots of my art if you dig what we do here. You'll find more of that at my Patreon, patreon.com/Jim Rugg. I'm so excited to dig into this one, Ed. I love Charles Burns. You can see it starting from the cover, just how precise he is slinging ink, manipulating a brush. But this is about a masked wrestling character. And if you are a longtime wrestling fan, the first thing I think about is Andre the Giant whenever he was under a wrestling mask going as a giant machine. Actually, that gimmick happens a couple years after El Borba. So I was hoping to make a connection of Charles Burns seeing that and turning it into a character, but the time doesn't quite line up. El Borba comes first by several years.
And you know what it comes from. In a world where there's way less access to information, you're flipping through the stations and you see your first El Santo movie or something, and you're like, what is this? And maybe you have nobody to talk about the thing with. Like, I saw this guy, he wore a damn wrestling mask with a suit.
Yes.
Like, what is that? And I, like, it would be amazing, you know? Like I think about, like, when I was a little kid, you see your Masters of the Universe figures, man, and there's Fakor or whatever, and it's, like, the blue He-Man, and it's like, what is this a misprint? Like, it's the most mysterious, crazy thing. Charles Burns' artwork is, like, rooted in that kind of wonder and discovery that comes from the cathode ray tube, Outer Limits, all that kind of crazy atomic age kind of sci-fi imagery.
There's so much, it reminds me so much of like a Dan Klaus, who I think a lot of what you just described influenced his early work.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this is several years before 8-Ball or even Lloyd Llewellyn, you know, making it, I think, just overlap of influences is what's coming out of these, you know, why there are some of those similarities, but they are coming out of that oddball television, and it's the same world of where you would find wrestlers or masked wrestlers, you know, late at night flipping channels and finding weird broadcasts. That's what this whole world feels like.
It's the generational thing, you know, like Dave Stevens is a part of that generation, you know, believe it or not. And he was fascinated with like Santo and that kind of stuff. Like, it had to be crazy seeing that on television and not being able to ask mom and dad, like, what is that?
Yeah, right.
Like, they have no answer for you on that.
Yeah, it's the height of that of a certain weirdo pop culture.
Kitsch culture, as it was described in the Fantagraphics submission guidelines for many, many years.
As we look at more of these, like, first-generation alternative cartoonists, I am so impressed by how stylistically, like they're so developed stylistically.
Well, this is cool because this is Burns in 82, and we're seeing him figure his shit out.
We are. There are some techniques in here that we're not going to see him use, say, by the time he gets the black hole.
Right.
Which, but it's, I still love seeing that. And just very quickly, this was mostly printed, or maybe all of it was printed in Hard-Boiled Defective Stories, yeah. which Pantheon had done an edition of late 80s. I think it was
86.
Around the time of things like...
First Mouse.
Jimbo, Mouse, exactly. It's almost like the Raw, some of the Raw cast going off and doing a graphic novel, early graphic novels with Pantheon.
Designed by and edited by Francois
right.
and Art Spiegelman. So they made a couple of Pantheon made a couple of dollars on this like little mouse thing. Let's get a little another.
Yeah. What else can we do?
Another shot at
this
that.
This is successful. Let's try this again. It's funny to think of going from like, hey, mouse worked. What else you got? Not quite the same.
But you know what? Same print runs and stuff. So El Borba, prohibitively expensive. It's hard to find. Two-Fisted Defective Stories, you can get that for $30.
Good tip. And last thing I would say about the background, three of these stories serialized in heavy metal. So that's kind of cool.
That tells you the landscape of American comics, because look at this weird style. There's no place for that in Marvel or DC. Even like Weirdo is too raw for this thing. And speaking of raw, like some of the, you know, Charles Burns, one of the early kind of contributors to Raw. And I think as we see some of the stuff that he kind of sloughs off mm-hmm. At a later date, I see Mark Byer influence in here with some of the, this era of Burns, and you could just start flipping, like he starts to inject, there's gray value that's not done with just straight line, but he's doing stipple and some screen tone and stuff.
Yeah, I think there may even be hatching at some point as we go along. But you see, you know, robots, mutant characters. It's this fallen world. I have to assume that New York, early 80s, late 70s, New York is always reminds me of this kind of thing. I connect that to that kitsch culture.
And worth noting, Charles, don't watch this episode.
Uh-oh.
But the hatching, he's figuring that out. Yeah, or the feathering, I should say. He's feathering that out. It's not as precise as it becomes. It's not as precise as that front cover.
Yes.
He's developing that stuff.
But that precision is still in there. And you see it in details like, you know, robot arms. This first story, and this is a heavy metal story. This character, human, but is going to these classes to transform into a robot. So, of course, the parents add, they hire El Borba as kind of a private detective. And constantly he's talking about, you just got to pay me a lot of money. And he'll go out and do his thing. But they hire him to go find their missing son. And that leads him to this robot school.
It's like...
It's Kid Rebellion, you know, the robot part.
Sure, sure. Thinking about the art, it's like a perversion on clip art or something with the precision of it. You know, like the eyes are set far apart to make everybody kind of grotesque. Beautiful designs on all of this stuff.
And a very short story, this first one. You know, I think it's 6 or 8 pages. The big revelation whenever they bring the kid home is the parents are, they also have robot parts. They're kind of proud of him then.
This is Charles Burns. He's you know, he plays with this weird shit, but then he gets his own stuff in there. So it's El Borba is commenting on, like, you know, kid culture and young music. So he's like a generation removed. And then with this hippie, you know, with this parental stuff, it is kind of like the hippie shit or like the parents that, you know, have their wild days and then you have a kid. So now you're responsible for a human being, but you did all the stuff that they're doing and you can't let them know that you think it's kind of cool.
It's this first story especially feels very EC as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's obviously one of those major influences on the alt cartoonists of this generation, but it really feels like it here.
This is a modern day, a later day Burns piece.
Early 2000s. Late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah,
it was 99 is the publication date for this. So pretty far into like Black Hole at that point. Which I would consider his mature period. But here's, Ed, one of those techniques you're talking about, like the stippling in that logo. His logos are just amazing from the get-go, his lettering.
Shouts to Susan Moore, the letterer, who did these titles and stuff. And her lettering is totally congruent with the line art. They are a beautiful blend because whatever tool she's using, it's the same line weight as these straight edges right here.
Yeah. Yeah, man, these pages are just so rich.
But she's an incredible letterer.
He's reading Wrestling Magazine, of course. And the ad for the back, like the Charles Atlas ad, beat up weaklings.
El Borba is a great character. Like, he sort of develops the character right when he basically quits doing the character. And he's basically just a piece of shit. Like he just, he talks smack.
Yes.
Always. He calls everybody out of their name.
Violence is always the answer.
Yeah.
This is a bunch of that hatching that we're talking about. Like, that's something that doesn't really go much further. And then the sky, the clouds, are also hatched. Almost that organic duo shade, but I don't think it is that, because you can see more developed hatching. It seems like it's just something he's drawing in there.
Yeah.
You know, you can see it in the sky, where it'd be much more than like a duo shade treatment. But he's so clean with it. You know, you look at it and it's like, yeah, that could almost be some sort of a pattern. Look at the white line, like where the shadow falls on the door, and like that white line just continues, totally precise and perfect.
Yeah. I mean, it's the brick walls. Like, that's something he's going to carry over forever.
Yeah, that precision's amazing, and it creates almost these patterns. Whether it's the vertical lines, those, do you think those are a pattern, Ed? Like a screen tone?
No, I think he inks that.
That's amazing.
Because they're so uneven.
Yeah, they're not quite flawless. Yeah, I kind of hope he isn't listening. it's the fact that I can't totally tell.
Important, stunning. Important fun storytelling piece is this bullet wound right here, because it's going to play a part. Like, it's going to be there visually in the next story and the story afterward. Like, it'll be stitched up in the next story, and then it'll just be a scar through the rest of his life, and I think even on the front cover.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But
it's almost origin. How did he get that scar?
Exactly.
It's real fun. He grabs this guy, and to get what he wants out of him, starts doing wrestling moves to him. Dutch rub.
Yeah, you don't immediately think of Charles Burns as, like, funny comics, but this stuff is kind of hysterical.
Oh, it's real fun, yeah.
Like, the stuff that he gets in there is super funny.
It's amazing. This whole storyline has to do with these burgers that are I suppose unhealthy but highly addictive.
Yeah.
And you see some of the patterning on the burgers too that may not be normal Charles Burns mark making. Love the car. Doesn't this feel to you like that New York kind of, you know, late 70s kind, yeah, of New York? Just sure. A burnout urban setting. And of course, you see the grand opening of this crooked burger place lined up around the block. Such a fallen world that all these characters live in. Riding the subway, again, that kind of urban setting, and you are right about the scar, Ed, the stitched up bullet hole.
Yeah.
Little tiny snake tattoo.
I know.
Just all the little details. I love the way he draws the mask, too. I think it's so cool looking.
Yeah.
That's one of those mutant human.
This is...
it's just violence. It's just always threats against one character against another, constantly.
This stuff was probably in the news really heavy then, man, but cryogenics is the name of the game of this story, and one of the most famous dudes, besides Walt Disney, to have their body freeze is Ted Williams.
Mm-hmm.
And
I almost said Ted Adams.
And who's that?
IDW publisher. Oh, right. Not the same.
Yeah. Somebody called in, and it was a controversy. You could read articles about this, man, about the mistreatment of Ted Williams' head, because they said that it was stacked on top, and it started to get, like, freezer burn and stuff on top of, like, a sun-kissed tuna can.
Because
this is, like, an unregulated,
of course,
nonsense, yeah, weird
of course
business.
So, you know, it's just a deep freeze of people in it.
California hippie shit. the guy that called in said that Ted Williams' head, it was, like, stuck to a tuna can.
That's funny. That feels like it could be in a Burns comic.
Yeah.
He's eating his breakfast cereal, and it's Shitties.
Right.
Yeah, so the widow hires him to investigate her husband's, frozen body in this place that's freezing them. So what you see here. And El Borba recognizes that something's not right, punches through the window and pulls off the head, and now he wants answers. this is the kind of the big epic. We're going to have multiple parts of this unfolding.
Yeah. Yeah, there's one after this that's going to be an even longer story, I think. Five parts, maybe. Four.
Look at those parallel lines in perspective.
He's getting more precise. Even on the page earlier, there were straight lines that were feathered really long. Probably you have to use a brush for something like that.
You see that pointillism? Love the static and the wavy television screen lines.
Perfect.
This stuff, you read it, and it's kind of hypnotic. The amount of, I don't know if it's the amount of black or if it's like the parallel kind of super clean lines, but something about it, it just... Like, my peripheral vision is wonky whenever I'm reading a panel and really focused.
Right.
Which I love, you know? It's kind of almost a physical reaction. Taco Shack.
The use of black is just incredible, man. Like, on the several planes, but you still can sell the depth with those few straight lines.
He uses white the way most cartoonists use black.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. And it's... For his purposes, it's all about focal point, man.
It is. And the storyline here, so he's trying to track down where are these bodies, and it's almost being John Malkovich or something, that they figured out this scam of attaching the heads to newborn bodies. So you have a bunch of these old man heads on top of like little babies, which is perfect for artist Charles Burns.
Absolutely.
And El Borba's world. Such a great juxtaposition. So funny to see, like, this was one of the mistakes. So it's like a little tiny head on the body, which again feels very Andre the Giant-like. How about that for architecture?
Oh, I know.
The action stuff is funny. That makes me think of the tryout pages. Charles Burns has these Marvel tryout pages that float around the internet you can find of him doing, like, Spider-Man pages.
It speaks to the stuff that Crumb talks about, like, where, you know, when you start to try to deconstruct the superhero guys, it's like there is a particular set of skills that they have, because you know it's very stiff, but it works for Charles Burns' purposes. If it was some guy trying to get a job at Marvel, they're going to tell you go get your shine box.
Oh, that'd be amazing to like hand these pages to an editor at Marvel and see what comes back. He goes back to report to the widow what he's learned, and she is now headless. I love the architecture. The carpet's really neat, too. It's points, but it's not what I think of as pointillism.
Right, yeah. I think that would be a screen. But there are ones that are not screen. And you could tell, like, because they'll be uneven in spots. These are all screens, though.
It's such an unsettling... His art is so unsettling. Like, you put a panel like this in there, and it's just... It's perfectly drawn... But a disturbing subject.
It's a.
It makes it more disturbing somehow, that Uncanny Valley style of like perfect ink lines. There's something about this. It looks like a robot drew this.
There's a very specific Jack Kamen shock suspense story that deals with a lady. I think she cuts the head off of everybody in her family, and it's Jack Kamen. It's that perfect drawing. It's romance comic artwork with all these headless bodies, and that's exactly what that piece reminds me of.
Tell me if you agree with this. It's uncanny how much this is Andre the Giant.
Sure.
Because this is years. I don't know if he was even wearing this gimmick in 82, 83. You know, I think that's before he even switched to that one strap outfit. But body type, it just, again and again, it feels like Andre the Giant.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. These little bodies, just so crazy.
So creepy. And using a chainsaw for the head removal. It's incredible, over-the-top stuff. And you get glimpses of, you know, romance comics, something that you still see Charles Burns looking at and playing with that stuff. Man, these interstitial pages are pretty impressive. Bone Voyage, get to see him doing some car art, hot rod art.
Yeah, what's fun is this is like, you know, his dream car, or whatever. We're going to see this car get jacked up. just like, see, now it's just a scar on his body right there. We're going to see this car get scarred up throughout this whole story.
Yeah, it's sad in that way. Another, you got to have your used car salesman. How do you make that guy feel? Like he's a little bit scummy, a little bit something's wrong?
A little ambulance chaser gimmick with that little neck brace on him.
El Borba pays cash and scoots off the lot, almost running this guy down in the process. and on to his next job, man. You just gotta pay him a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, the character's really getting fleshed out much more with his patois with the people he's working with, man.
Yeah, let me give you some cash to get started with. Sounds like I'm your man. Yeah, El Borb is a fun character. It's kind of sad that this is all we get of him, but what a great book.
Shades of Dog Boy with that character, man, playing with the Archie aesthetics. And you know, I've said it before, but like when you're a little kid and you see Archie, and you see that tic-tac-toe board, it's like, what the fuck is that, man? What are you telling us with that?
Yeah, it's great to see that pushed. You get a full head of that, and it's just like...
And a beard of it.
Stop.
And a beard.
What are you doing?
Like, look at that as a beard. It's crazy. Looks like he's got a cyclone fence on his face.
Yeah, speaking of crazy, how about his haircut?
I see people like that at SPX.
Yeah.
Dudes are doing cosplay of this character.
It's fun to introduce this character, too, because it sets up for they're going to square off.
Yes, they have to.
Two heavyweights, man.
They have to, man. Two monsters.
We demand it. By popular demand, they need to fight. His car's already starting to show some wear and tear.
It is, yeah.
That's the peril of his kind of dangerous work.
That's it, man. You play around in weird parts of town.
It looks like the door has been forced already. It's just like explosion.
This guy's a great character because he's so dim-witted. Like, everything... I sure hope Miss Kislyak isn't in any kind of trouble. Like, look at this house. There's blood stains. He's just super extra naive, man.
So good. This chick was into some pretty far-out shit. He's pricking himself with a needle.
Yeah, man.
It reminds me of, like, anytime you see the detective shows and they get a bag of Coke and it's like, gotta take a taste of that. Yeah. Let me shoot up a little bit, make sure what this is.
Little crotchless gimmicks.
Yeah.
The character, this feels like Kim Dichart. Mm. That square eyeball. He's the only guy I've ever seen draw that kind of square eye.
Whenever I reread this, this reminded me of Lois Lane's haircut from Aliens, Superman Aliens.
Yeah, sure, man. She's got thin lips, man. That always makes me suspicious.
This almost reminds me of, like, David Lynch, and some of his movies will have, like, that lounge singer kind of appearance.
This has a surreal vibe, man.
Totally.
Like, this is a Lynchian sort of comic.
Well, you know, I mentioned Dan Clowes, and it's that same kind of deal. Like, that early work compared to David Lynch. This stuff makes total sense that you compare the same stuff. This is amazing as we see this heavy kind of being distorted as El Borba has been drugged and is losing his consciousness, and reality's just bending around him. And this feels like Burns is really coming into his own.
Yeah, he might have saved this for Raw magazine or something, man.
Yeah, it could be. I think we've already covered three stories. That the first three may have been the ones in heavy metal. I'm not sure which ones are which. But yeah, this does feel like the next level. Like, even these jagged lightning bolt lines and the white around them, you know, the drawing being broken up into pieces as it shifts.
Yeah, Art Spiegelman's jerking off to that. And this is the stuff that makes me feel like it's like Mark Beyer energy, like these kind of textures and things, these shapes, these jagged
probably perspectives. Probably a cartoonist worth looking at some point for, talk about an original guy who kind of predates this generation, almost a bridge between undergrounds and alternatives.
I have all the Raws, man. Like, we should probably bust out Raw number 2 within the next couple weeks.
More of that creepy, weird elements, even just the hallways, you know, like there are these motifs that you'll find in things that are they're dreamlike. You said surreal, absolutely, and his stuff's full of it. Late night, you know, deep cable cuts.
So this is, we're getting into like the sort of mid 80s with this stuff, and Spy magazine, which is a place that all these guys would do work. That's not where this appeared, but you know, Drew Friedman, like this, it was a magazine that people would check out, kind of like National Lampoon. They did their first stuff on like Bohemian Grove in San Fran, and how all the, you know, power brokers across the world go there and piss on trees and burn baby effigies to the owl god Moloch and stuff. And, it, you know, it's like Ronald Reagan doing that.
Yeah.
So that's what this is right here. It's the one percenters going off being heathens for a minute.
Yeah, concurrent with something like Satanic Panic of the 80s, definitely. You know, being another one that I'm sure all these guys were trying to figure out how to use that as fodder in these stories.
Yeah.
Yeah, the lettering is so great whenever you see these sound effects pop up. So strong. Feels like MAD. You know, very, very precise.
Yeah, yeah, that's a Wally Wood kind of piece.
Starting to see the symbol. Again, you know, like we would see something like this in a Velvet Glove cast in iron in the early 8-Balls. Love the car. Love the flames on the front of the car. More cars should have flames painted on them.
Go do that, Jim.
I was going to say it'd be a great gag to take home to my wife. paint the Nissan. Put some flames on the Nissan. This even feels like Andre the Giant whenever he's trying to pass and hiding in these costumes. Something about the bulk or something about the scale that he draws, like how many heads tall a character is. There's just something there that, I don't know, man, the proportions line up right.
I see that guy at SPX too, by the way.
Yeah, I I recognize him as well.
He procures sweaty dollars.
This guy, to me, looks like he may be in half the alternative comics that Fantagraphics published in the 80s and 90s, right?
Yeah, he's a character actor in
yes.
in the triumvirate of Burns, Ware, and Dan Klaus. Because, I mean, it is like a Rusty Brown. Like, you see him in Rusty Brown.
Yeah, that hairy chest too, man.
And these guys, I mean, they grew up in the 70s, you know, like, that. I still think of people wearing Boss jeans, man. They still think of people having that haircut.
So he's rescuing this woman playing a little girl who may be there voluntarily, maybe drugged out of her mind as part of this cult.
Yeah, like when he's going back there to, you know, explore his own desires and stuff, they're like, oh, you want something a little weird. Like, you just don't want, like, regular girls. And she's that adult baby fetish that, who knows if Burns is, like, just making that up for himself. But, like, that does exist, you know? That's real shit.
Yeah. Yeah, these guys that are digging around, you know, weird corners of culture.
That's a part of it.
Hard to tell what they find.
Yeah, you know, yeah, like that's a part of it.
It's not very filtered when you're just digging through these weird magazines and zines and movies that are traded around. This guy shows up and we get El Borba. This guy shows up to interrupt El Borba. Like, what are you doing? This isn't, you're not taking her. And El Borba's response, clam up, ugly. I'm going to kick you in the chops if you don't show me a way out of here, which is totally El Borba throughout everything, you know? What I love about that character. And then he leaves the guy that helped him, leaves him behind there. Fend for yourself. You ratted out your boys and now you're on your own. Whenever he's like, they'll kill me, he says, tough shit.
And look at the car, man. Like, it's already got graffiti all over it and stuff.
Yeah, I think every time we see it, it's a little bit more marked up. That couch is so kitschy. And again, with the shit on the walls. Burns does this as something that continues, the wavy panel borders.
Yeah.
I can't believe how perfect they are. I've tried doing wavy panel borders after seeing this stuff. Much harder than it looks.
Sure. Yeah, he's just got that very precise hand.
Yeah, I guess that's it. His art was in that Carnegie Mellon art show.
It was the frog. The
cover.
The frog autopsy.
I remember staring at that and just being like, this is... You get lost. Like, these perfect lines have some sort of effect.
And also,
very psychedelic.
The art, like, the page is important to him. So he's got that concoction of, like, the perfect black ink that you don't see any brush strokes or anything like that. So it's like, is this a print? There's no white out. I don't see pencil.
Now he's calling out his moves as he's fighting this guy. The double claw, knee drop, sleeper hold.
Well, you got to call out your moves when you do them on somebody, man.
Yeah, if you don't have an announcer, if Jim Ross isn't handy to be calling these things out, you got to do it yourself, starting with a drop kick to the face.
Well, it's a whisper. You got to, you're supposed to cover your mouth when you do it.
And his car's completely destroyed now. No good deed goes unpunished. Mm-hmm. Bongo Butt.
Not to be confused with Howard Stern's Butt Bongo Fiesta.
Right, not to be confused. 1987 on this one. We're going to get into some extra materials in the back where he talks about the process of this, but it feels like he created the first story with no outlet in mind. You know, it was just like, I have this idea for a comic, I'm going to make it, and then hopefully someone will publish it.
Yeah, at worst, it'll be in like one of those weird vestigial underground things. It's like, you know, a kitchen sink anthology or something.
This is the last, El Borba story in this collection, and it feels like he's basically full-on Charles Burns that we know from Black Hole.
Sure, yeah, very close at the very least.
Always fun when you see him tackling things like clouds, things that I don't associate with him, but whenever he does them, they fit his world. They look like the aesthetic of his style.
Is that the vast deference of, the nutsack or something?
Yeah, I think it's a heart.
Oh, okay. I say that just because we're talking sperm in this comic a bunch.
Yeah, you're not wrong about that. It's kind of funny looking at a heart and thinking, yeah, it's a nutsack or a heart. An anatomically correct heart. And that is the end. El Borba. Man, it's a beautiful... It's just beautiful. Yeah. This is a good addition, too. Like, Fantagraphics did a nice job. You could see in the beginning, whenever we were putting comics up next to it, an oversized collection, compared to a standard comic book size. But here's sort of some of Burns' notes about where this comes from. Lucha Libre magazine. Kind of cool to see that. I have a few of those issues. And it's basically this. It's just masked wrestlers. So if you're into that aesthetic, pretty good resource. This is almost the El Santo mask. I don't know if that's... John Borba, so not El Santa, but kind of similar. And early sketches of this character.
I like his sketches because they're it's not Burns' final art. Like, it's almost Klausian in a way. Mm-hmm. Like early Klaus.
Yeah, it looks like pen, right?
Yeah.
It's very scratchy the way those are composed. Pretty neat to see that. First appearance in Raw number 4, 1982, is just like a pinup.
That's the cover.
Oh, that's the cover?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that. Yeah, and you can really see stylistically he's doing stuff here in 1982 that's, you know, kind of falls away.
Yeah, thinner lines.
Jam piece with, I don't know, Giorgio Carpentieri, but Art Spiegelman. And Charles Burns. And you can see some international editions. This is a French edition cover here, German edition cover here. And then, Ed, you said in Defective Stories, these are like your chapter breaks, some of these pieces.
Right, yeah. Like leading up to all the individual stories.
I think this might be the cover.
The cover, yeah.
This is your cover for the Hard-Boiled Defective Stories, which was the original printing, original book collection of this.
I'm trying to think, though, because I think that there's, like, colored inks involved. I don't remember it being pure black and white. Like, it's like a gouache painting or something. So it didn't quite exactly look like this in my mind's eye.
I love these pieces. Burns does a lot of this stuff. I want to say fake covers. Yeah. I don't know if that's even the best way to describe them, but they're like book covers. And he continues to do this. You'll see them published now and then.
The X'd out fake.
Yes.
Covers and comics and language and all that.
Yeah, I think it's very flattering to his style doing these kind of pseudo covers.
Yeah, man. If you got an in-house letterer who's that strong,
yeah.
Let's put her to work, man.
Yeah, fantastic. Love that one. That one just feels so like it could be a real comic, but also not right.
Yeah.
So that's El Borba. Just Charles Burns, you know, doing great wrestling-inspired comics. Wrestling and, I guess, pulp, noir kind of inspired stuff. Kitsch, surreal, beautiful. What can you say?
Yeah. Really really nice to look at, like, you know, his earliest efforts, man. This is before he had... this is before Raw, you know? This is before he had a serialized comic strip where he was burnishing off those can't even call them rough edges, but just figuring out his style more thoroughly with, you know, Big Baby and Dog Boy and stuff like that. So
we often talk about what it would be like to read these comics when they're coming out. The other piece is, like, what would it be like to be an alternative cartoonist with a unique style and sensibility in the early 80s with, like, there aren't alternative comics. There aren't, you know, there's no home. There's no obvious home for something like this. And if this is what you're coming up doing and what you're inclined to make, you had to feel like you're, you know, talk about feeling like a weirdo out on your own.
Totally, totally. I get the sense because there's just too many of these guys who are too strong popping up that something was bubbling.
Yes.
Probably a center point was Comics Journal, the conversations that were happening around there. But Paul Karasik told the story, you know, we looked at Raw Magazine number one. Charles Burns is not in there. He might be in two, definitely in three. But Paul Karasik told me the story of, like, the knock on the door at you know, the loft where Raw was coming out of, that was, like, in the address in the Indicia, and just, like, alone Charles Burns, like, help, like, hook me up.
Burns, is he part of that Gary Panter, Matt Groening college group?
Yeah, Linda Berry.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's if you would call it college.
Art school, something. They were all in school together, so you get to see, about four incredible cartoonists, all in different, very different styles, working, thinking very differently. But man, what a group that would have been.
Yeah, it's Portlandia, man. It's at, I think, at Evergreen College or whatever. The one that's been in the news lately.
Yeah, it's something to think about, you know. It's such a different world. I mean, comics have even changed since we started out in terms of how you publish, what outlets are available, how you reach your audience, all of those things. But I think back to this time period, and it's remarkable to me that somebody would have the commitment to do this without the knowing what the future holds. Like, now this makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
Early 80s, this is some really bold direction to go.
Yeah. Whenever I see these guys, man, like the first gen badass, like, Fantagraphics guys, I sort of thank them in a way, man, for, like, breaking down these doors that you or I have no trouble walking through.
I also wonder, you talk about how strong that first generation is. I wonder if you have to be, because mm-hmm. there is no outlet for this stuff. So you have to show up and be like, you can't be refused.
Maybe there were other guys, you know, and nobody's talking about them anymore.
Well, loved it, Ed. Very fun read. Talk about a fun read. This was awesome.
Not the last Charles Burns we're going to have.
Definitely
on the channel.
Not.
But not by a long sight, man. Kayfabers, like, follow, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Hit the bell. We'll notify you when new vids are available. Jimmy, what's out there?
You can join me on Patreon at patreon.com/JimRugg, where you can download my out-of-print, hard-to-find mini-comics and zines. You can find lots of my original art and process stuff, behind-the-scenes kind of things. If you like what we do here on Cartoonist Kayfabe, it's basically more of that. So patreon.com/JimRugg.
Red Room Issue 1, going to be coming out from Fantagraphics in May. It's going to start being doled out on a monthly basis, so pre-order your comics today. You could hit up the Fantagraphics website in my link tree in the description below. You can read the comics ahead of time at my Patreon in the description below by way of my link tree. Get it put on your pull list. It's going to start coming out regularly.
You can subscribe to the Cartoonist Kayfabe e-newsletter at the links below this video. You can find Cartoonist Kayfabe t-shirts and merchandise at the links below this video.
Jimmy, give him one last set of marching orders, man. We're going to be on our way.
Read more comics.